Jazz 91.9 WCLK, Atlanta's Jazz Station, a broadcast service of Clark Atlanta University.
This program is not being used to make diagnosis, administer treatment, prescribe medication, or order tests. The information contained in this program is provided as an educational service. This program is not a replacement for the relationship you have with your healthcare provider. If you have concerns about your health, please contact your healthcare provider immediately.
Welcome to Your Health Connection. I am Dr. Ronald A. Johnson, president of Clark Atlanta University. This program was made possible by the Center for Cancer Research and Therapeutic Development at Clark Atlanta University, by WCLK 91.9 FM, and by Clark Atlanta University itself. Your Health Connection focuses on today's healthcare information to help you improve your quality of life.
And good evening, everyone. I'm your host, Patty Walden, your host of Your Health Connection on 91.9 FM WCLK. Of course, Your Health Connection on WCLK is community engagement from the Center for Cancer Research and Therapeutic Development at Clark Atlanta University. Thank you so much for joining us tonight for the March 15th, 2017 edition of Your Health Connection. Tonight we're talking about brain cancer. It's a rare disease, but the results of it are often fatal. There are some genetic conditions and environmental conditions that could contribute to the development of brain cancer, but the risk factors are much less defined for brain cancer than for other cancers in the body. Do wireless devices or lifestyle choices increase your chances of getting brain cancer? What about age? Gender? We'll try to get those answers for you tonight. Tonight we've got guest expert Dr. Shoma Sengupta, and we've got brain cancer survivor Beth Jordan. Of course, we're taking your questions live at 404-880-9255. Beth, I want to start with you because, again, brain cancer is rare, and I just would like for you to walk our listeners through your journey of just from the time of discovery to now. The short version.
Yeah, short version. Fortunately for me, it's been several years. And when I was diagnosed with a cancer that's measured in months. So I was 45 at the time. Over the holidays, Thanksgiving, Christmas, a lot of stress. So the headache that I had, I just attributed towards the holidays and kept putting off doing anything about it until the holidays were over, celebrated New Year's. But it got to the point where I felt like a vice grip was on my head going from one ear to the other ear. And it was tightening so fast that one night while I was sleeping, I grabbed my husband and said, "Take me to the emergency room." When we got there, they immediately did a scan and could see a mass in the brain, and we learned a new vocabulary word called glioblastoma. Did not know what we were doing, but fortunately had a friend who was a local neurosurgeon and was able to give us some good advice. Sure. And I think the best advice he gave us was, you know, take a deep breath, look around, and let's look at your options. And here I am, you know, 7 years later, seven brain surgeries later, traveled coast to coast seeking the best treatment I could find, and met a lot of wonderful doctors and a lot of wonderful people along the way. But
let me ask Dr. Shoma to jump in. Just tell us a little bit about yourself first.
So I'm a neuro-oncologist. What that means is that I treat brain cancers, spinal cord cancers, but I also treat benign brain tumors and also cancers that originated in other parts of the body, like the lung, but went to the brain. So my sort of role is multifaceted. It's a very rewarding field for me. I went into it because I had personal exposure to brain tumor patients when I was going through school, and then in my clinical training. I trained in medicine in Cambridge in England, where I worked for a very different health system than the United States. And I came across patients that often didn't receive treatments on time and were not diagnosed on time. And when I moved to the United States and did my training here, I saw how valuable it was to always have hope for the different types of brain cancer patients there are out there, and to improve survival and to fight for better cures.
You know, we just heard Beth's short description of her experience, and she's saying 7 years later, what are the chances that someone diagnosed with brain cancer survives this length of time? And as she mentioned, this is measured in months. You're usually given this sentence. And I think this disease is dubbed the Terminator. Is that right? For obvious reasons. But what are some of the things that that were done right per Beth with her survival rate thus far?
Well, Beth, having sort of survived this brain cancer for a while, is not a rare individual. People fall in what's called a bell curve. There are people who are outliers and there are people who are in the middle. The worst case scenario is always mentioned, and then there are better case scenarios and very good case scenarios. So just because one is given the diagnosis of a terminator, i.e. a glioblastoma, it does not mean that their survival is 3 months or 6 months. In fact, as physicians, we do not have a crystal ball to say how long somebody will survive and how long they're able to tolerate treatments that are out there, and also have the intelligence to seek out clinical trials and other treatment options for their condition.
Excellent. Thank you. I want to remind, first of all, the guests that we are here live taking your questions, and you can certainly reach us at 404-880-9255 if you hear something that maybe sounds familiar to you, or if you have a question. Maybe a family member has gone through this, and maybe you are curious to find out if it's if this is something that could potentially be genetic. Call us. We've got experts here to talk with you today. And that being mentioned, is brain cancer a genetic disease?
So rarely is brain cancer considered a genetic entity. We're very fortunate at the Winship Cancer Institute and at Emory University to have Dr. Daniel Bratt, who helped spearhead the reclassification of brain tumors under the WHO or World Health Organization guidelines. And what the sort of bottom line is about this kind of thing is that you have to sort of take each type of brain tumor in its perspective.
Okay. So,
and sort of going on from there, in terms of genetics, there are familial syndromes which are linked to brain cancers. We often see this in the pediatric realm, going into adulthood, but rarely do adults presenting with primary brain tumors, and when I say primary, I mean brain tumors originating from the brain and spinal cord, who have genetic syndromes. That isn't to say that they might not have unusual mutations in their tumors, which might help them in their treatments or help us in this day and age of targeted therapies that a lot of people hear about to design better drugs.
So it's my understanding that if one, particularly a youth, has been exposed to radiation or radiation therapy, that it could, in fact, increase the likelihood of them developing brain cancer. Are you familiar with that? Has that happened? Does it happen? If so, how often?
So there have been studies that have looked at this because there are survivors of pediatric brain cancers and other cancers who've received chemotherapy and radiation and then who go on to develop other cancers. It's not necessarily brain cancers that they develop, but they might develop other types like blood cancers or other solid tumor cancers being cancers to other parts of the body because of their exposure. So people using that kind of extrapolation, one could sort of argue that overexposure to any hazardous chemicals could also cause these problems. But there are lots of diseases caused by hazardous exposures and environmental problems.
Okay. Beth, 7 surgeries. What was it like after surgery number 1? What was your emotional state like after that first surgery?
The first surgery, I would say, was definitely the most difficult. Everything was new. Mm-hmm. I remember sitting there the night before just not knowing if I would wake up, not knowing if I would wake up as me, not really understanding all the side effects and what was ahead. Remarkably, I woke up and I remember just begging for my family to come see me. Checking all the fingers and toes, mm-hmm. and everything was okay. And I think I was more shocked that everything was okay. It just amazes me that you can cut into the brain and remove something the size of a golf ball. It seems like they always describe your tumors as fruits, but for some reason they define mine the size of a golf ball. And within days, I was pretty much back to myself, other than the effects that the painkillers were causing, the hallucinations and stuff. But the first one was, I'll say, my easiest, but yet the scariest.
What about the 7th? How does it compare to, you know, when you started out not really knowing, but then, you know, are you just a pro now, like, okay, going back in? Or
I think I have such confidence in the neurosurgeons now that Excellent. I use. I'm going to say I know how to vet them. Really looking for an excellent surgeon that removes brain tumors all the time versus somebody who can remove a brain tumor that, say, maybe does spinal surgery and surgery like vascular, like aneurysm right. type thing. I mean, finding somebody who removes solid tumors as their specialty. And it's really a small world out there.
Okay.
There's not that many doctors who do that.
Dr. Shoma, how does one go about seeking out this type of surgeon? And, you know, what goes into that research?
So you want to basically seek out the surgery at a center that does a lot of them. So, for example, where I work at the Winship Cancer Institute, which is an NCI-designated institute, there's neurosurgery that does tumor surgeries for Emory University Hospital, and they have an affiliation with the Winship Cancer Institute. So Dr. Jeffrey Olson and his team do a phenomenal job in that. You, as a patient, one needs to seek out not a general neurosurgeon, as Beth has already alluded to, but somebody who specializes in tumor surgeries and feels that they can definitely get as much tumor out as possible and that is safe for the individual.
Excellent. Thank you. You are listening live to Your Health Connection on 91.9 FM WCLK. We are talking about brain cancer tonight. We've got a brain cancer survivor whose story is wonderful. We've got an expert here, Dr. Shoma. So we're taking your calls live, and we want to hear from you. The number is 404-880-9255. That's 404-880-9255. Give us a call so we can get you from where you are, even if you're just guessing and you've got some things going on and you've got questions about it. You've got a family member, perhaps, that has gone through it. Get some support. And we've got that here for you tonight. And speaking of support, Beth, what did that look like for you again, from hearing about the Terminator, you know, from hearing that, I would imagine that you would need every bit of support that's available to you. What did that look like for you?
I don't think it's a road that I could have walked alone. I had three kids at the time. I still have three kids, but they were young at the time. One in two in high school, and one had just left to go to college. You oftentimes with brain cancer, brain tumors, you present with seizures, so you lose the ability to drive. So just having friends who could help with the driving piece, the carpools with kids. But fortunately, I'm a native Atlanta, born at Emory Hospital. And so we have a large community of support, just friends, neighbors. It was wonderful to see people come out of the woodwork, so to speak, that I hadn't even talked to since I was a child. You know, just saying a lot of empathy, you know, how can we help? And then you develop a support as I traveled from hospital to hospital to seek care. How many doctors I've remained friends with who are always there to check in yearly, and if I'm evaluating a clinical trial or specific, you know, therapy, they'll often weigh in. And it's, I think, always gives us hope when maybe the internet says there is no hope.
Ah. Internet doctor. Mm-hmm. Quick question, Dr. Shoma, about seizures. Beth just mentioned, is should that be a concern for people out there? If there is a series of seizures, could it be a precursor for a particular ailment? And specifically tonight, does it have anything to do with potentially diagnosing brain cancer if they're consistent?
So in terms of statistics, in about 30% of primary brain tumor patients, they can present with a seizure. But not everyone who has seizures has a brain tumor. There are lots of other things that can occur in the brain that can also predispose one to having seizures. In addition, there's disorder labeled as epilepsy, which has a lot of reasons that fuel the diagnosis, and sometimes people can't find an underlying cause for why people are having these seizures, but they're very real to the individual. Whatever the reason of having seizures, people should seek help first from their primary care physician for a referral to a neurologist to seek out what the root cause is of the seizures. They should not go sort of untended to. The other problem with seizures is that there are lots of different faces of seizures. People think of the general shaking, convulsions, and then losing consciousness, maybe urinating on themselves. That's like a generalized seizure. But there are times in individuals where they might just have shaking, uncontrolled shaking of an arm, and they're looking at it and they're wondering, is this a seizure? Or they might have alterations of how they feel, or they might start smelling things that are not even there, or they might have abrupt personality changes. All of these unusual things need to be evaluated.
You keep mentioning primary and secondary. Can you define what that is for our listeners?
Yes. So a primary brain cancer is one that originates from the brain or spinal cord tissue. A secondary brain cancer is one that has emanated from elsewhere in the body. So, for example, a breast cancer patient who has had breast cancer for a number of years, has survived, might suddenly present with a seizure from the cancer going to the brain, or with headaches from cancer going to the brain. Cancer from the rest of the body can go to the brain. Lung cancer can, breast cancer can, and melanoma, and a whole gamut of other cancers can do this. And so in terms of the world of oncology or the cancer specialists, of which the Winship, where I work, sees 15,000 cancer patients annually, they're very good at screening for their sort of oncology patients as to whether they have issues with metastases or cancer spreading to the brain, i.e. secondary brain cancers.
You're listening to Your Health Connection on WCLK 91.9 FM. We're taking your calls live at 404-880-9255. Get your questions together. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back.
I'm Dr. Kimberly Davis with the Center for Cancer Research and Therapeutic Development at Clark Atlanta University. Prostate cancer often has no early warning signs or symptoms, but screening can detect the cancer in its earliest stages when it is most curable. The key is to know your numbers. Annual testing with the prostate-specific antigen test, or PSA, can lead to early detection and cancer confined to the prostate that has a significantly higher cure rate. Know what your PSA number is every year. Do not accept your PSA is normal. Ask for the actual number. This might be the most important number of your life. For more information, contact the Center for Cancer Research and Therapeutic Development at 404-880-6878 or email us at cancerinfo@cau.edu. This message has been brought to you by the Center for Cancer Research and Therapeutic Development at Clark Atlanta University.